Mr. O'Sullivan, Reel 26. Were the Germans afraid of this man then?
Definitely. And they didn't associate with a pair of others. Mrs. Price didn't associate with me at this time.
What did she do?
I did my job, but she didn't show any. I didn't go through the living quarters. I just did what she told me to do, and that was it. And Guy was and then had the same experience. Where he got on very familiar terms with the people he was working for. And when this Gestapo man visited, when he came into the village, and he stopped. Apparently, the Gestapo had visited before, but it was just a visit in the car and off again. But this man stopped at the burgers at Master's house. And the atmosphere in the village altered altogether. It was frightened of him. He was frightened of the secret police.
Did Mrs. Price warn you that this man had turned?
No. She just sort of ignored me.
And did you realise that something was up?
Something was up. So for the guy that got the same treatment that he's got, where he used to, when he had his break, coffee break, because, well, at 11 o'clock time, his coffee was, he had his time to work. He was continuing working while he was having his coffee, where normally he would have sat down and had it with his foreman and Gaffer. And I think Frank Rolfe was the same. He didn't get a chance to, they kept him working. Well, the bloke wasn't in all these places at once, obviously. But they were frightened that somebody would tell him that they, you know.
Now, you must have all realised something was up when you got back to the lager.
Well, we did.
What did you discuss amongst yourselves?
Well, we discussed this bloke in the village. He's somebody just died, I went to him. He's coming to find him. He went from time on.
And you changed your behaviour accordingly as well?
Well, we had to do it.
Now, were there any, as the war closed in, did the Germans retreat through the village at all?
Never saw them.
You didn't see any retreating German troops? And,
Because when you finished work at 6, you were back to the lager and you were locked in. That was it. There was no me walking through the lager, coming home at 9 o'clock at night, locking myself in.
You stopped that?
Yeah.
Until the end of?
Right till the end, yeah.
Yeah. Because of this?
Because of the Gestapo.
Yeah. Now, so, how did the situation finally break down? Can you describe that day where?
Well, when it was taken away.
Or the night before that as well, or just the whole process of?
Well, the night before, the Prussian came in and said, pack all your kit tomorrow, because we're moving to the big town. I can't think of the name of the place, it was really shifted to. It must have been 2 days before, because when we cleaned out all the parcels, the Red Cross parcels, they found 2 parcels belonging to me, which had never been delivered. And in each parcel was 2 pair of boots. There was a pair of boots in each parcel, along with a letter and all other sorts of things. And I could never wear new boots straight away. I mean, they would be worse than bloody clogs. So, the next morning, I took these boots down to Mrs. Price and gave them to her. And then, and that day we finished early. The brickyard finished early. We were out on there. Everybody came back to the lager. We had to pack all the kit up. You know, you had to pack your kit up. That was it. And the next morning we were off. But that night, Tom Tunney and Ben Lewis disappeared upstairs because Ben and Tom said they were staying. So obviously they'd talked to trouble with the woman upstairs and the father, because otherwise they wouldn't have dreamt of that section to step behind.
What did you think about?
They must have arranged it.
What did you think about them staying behind?
Well, we thought they were bloody idiots, really, you know. I mean, we thought there was. We still had the fear that the Russians would get to that place first, and we didn't fancy that. We know they were on the same side as us, they were fighting the Germans, but they could have been fighting us as well. Because there was also the fear that the Russians weren't as friendly towards the Americans and British as the Americans were towards the British, obviously. But I can't think of any of that bloody place, it doesn't mind. Anyway, they marched us out. When we assembled outside in the morning, when we found one had 17 men instead of 19, he got on the phone to say that two had gone spare. And we marched us to this. It was a big hospital when we got there. And we were there a couple of days, and there was a railway siding not far away because that got a nasty bombing one night. Well, it wasn't one night, it was one during one day. And I can always remember diving onto the floor in this passageway, and there were some doors, and the vibrations, the bloody doors must have opened 6 inches, and you know, so when we got rations, they were there just the same, we got fed at dinner time, that sort of thing, and Phil Carrick and Georgie Gent, me and Christy, we got. And Phil Carrick says, yeah, I think we'll have to bugger off here, we're not going to be any better off here than Tom and Lenny's.
Were you, were there other British prisoners at this new place?
Oh, there was hundreds. I mean, there were 17 of us, but there was hundreds. The Indians were there.
From the village?
From the village. Well, they weren't in our village, but there was, you know, they came to the village to go to pictures that time. So there must have been stationed somewhere near us. And there were hundreds of POWs there.
And about how far away was this place from?
Well, I don't know, about 7 or 8 miles, I would imagine.
So it was an 8 mile march?
Towards the east. We were marching towards the Russian lines.
To get away from the Americans.
Well, that's what the Germans have told us, isn't it?
Now, were there anything that sticks in your mind about that march, about on the road, what you saw of Germany?
We saw a lot of Germany itself.
Yeah, but just the situation of this.
Well, there was troops moving both ways. We were seeing vehicles going towards the American lines and vehicles coming from the American lines. And we didn't know whether the vehicles that was going towards the American lines were actually coming from the Russian lines, because there was only, 30 miles apart at that time, weren't there, the two rivers. Well, still are, I can imagine.
Were there any of these German troops that struck you as still disciplined and still?
No, it was a bit of a shambles.
So how long were you at this new place?
2 or 3 days.
And then you decided?
Then we decided that we'd had enough, and we was going to make our way back to Svedeborg, to the library, which we did.
And could you describe that journey?
Well, it was at night, and there were some woods near this place where we were. And we went through, as we were running through the woods, the German sentries were firing at us. They told.
So you're making your way back, and you were being shot at. Did they get near to you, this gunfire?
Well, we could hear the bullets, but we were running through trees, so it was fairly safe. But we didn't know there was anybody who was going to fire at us. Anyway, it was night time, and the thing I remember was crossing ploughed fields. And the other thing I remember most was seeing field mice in the fields. You know, quite a number for what we commented on, how many field mice we'd seen while we were travelling. It was fairly moonlight, but that's what struck me as most. And we made our way back to Svedeborg, and we got into the camp, and we bedded down there that night. And then the next day, Benny and Tom come, they obviously knew we were here, and they told us the Russians, we had to be careful not to go into the village because there were Russians out. And they said there was a Russian, but someone was coming on us, someone was in the cars. There was an old little move, instead of firing it out, so we just keep moving down. And then we talked to them. We did send them in the post to read them. And we asked them, said, well, they weren't with us in the post, but they were. So we decided we'd strike out for the moon, come and then he'd already met some handsome Russians in the village, and they told us to strike out for the moon. So we decided we would do. So we set up the next morning, and we were set up for the moon. And a lot of the civilian population was making their way there as well. And about 6 o'clock on the first day, we went into another German patrol. And he took us prisoner again. And I thought, oh, Dr. Wright came here. And they took us into a barn in the centre. And we had the ghost in coffee and the 8-hour biscuits. You know, they gave us some coffee and they had some dry tack. Well, it wasn't dry tack, it was decent biscuits. Anyway, they ate that and we had sort of a little bit of a. And they told us to go up into the loft to sleep. That's pretty close. I'm not really on that in his mind. We got taken back to camp a lot. Anyway, when we woke up next morning, they'd gone. So we carried on for the morning. And as I said, there was a lot of civilians everywhere. And we met Phil Garbutt's gaffer. He set up in a car and it broke down. Well, it didn't break down, it ran out of petrol. And they were still making to the moon. We could have kept it out and did a German army, what was on that road. They wanted to come with us, and Phil said, you notice Phil's in charge now. You know, he was. And Phil said, we don't want nobody, just the four of us will do now, so we reckon well.
So Germans were trying to surrender to you?
Yeah, and we didn't want to know it. And when we did eventually get to the moon, we met this. There was Americans this side of the river, on the Smederberg side of the river. And there was a bridge, and a very pontoon bridge across the river.
That they'd put up?
Which is, yeah, what they'd done. And when they saw those prisoners, we were prisoners, making our way there, they took us through, and there was letting German soldiers through. But they were taking everything off them. Watches, cameras, and there must have been a pair of watches and cameras. Oh, there must have been 1,000 bloody watches and cameras in a big heap. And they said to if you want a decent watch, we'll get you some. If you want a camera, help yourself. But I got a watch, George Gent got a watch, it was in the bloody. Cameras never really interested me at any time. And then we went to, at the other side of the bridge, there was more Americans, and they put us onto an American truck and took us to the airfield at Halle.
Now we'll talk about Halle, but I just want to keep us.
We fed as well. We fed on that.
You were fed when you got to Halle?
We were fed when we got across the border.
Could you describe that?
Well, the Germans took us into the Americans took us into their canteen. It was a big tent, a marquee, and there was tables and chairs in there, and they set us down and gave us a meal. And it was a very good meal as well. There was French fries and meat. It was like a cafeteria. You could put what you wanted. It wasn't hard tack at all. It was a really good meal. And Phil and them and George, you got the cigarettes and they gave them cigarettes as well, you know. Well, put a pack of new pocket and everything like that.
What was the Americans' attitude towards you?
Well, they was really wanting to know where we'd come from, what we'd done, and where we lived in England, and how long we'd been out there, and we've been they didn't interrogate us, they just talked to us. You know what I mean? It wasn't a taped interrogation or like that. It was just, I wanted to give them a name, rank and number and regiment. That was the official took them details down. But they, we didn't have any interrogation by an officer or anything like that. It just.
What about the Germans, civilians that were coming across with you?
They weren't letting them come across.
So what happened to them?
They were turned back. They had to go back home to the.
But the German troops were allowed over.
German soldiers in uniform were allowed over.
Yeah. Now, the American divisional history for the 104th Division, which was the unit that you met, talks about dropping leaflets east of the Mulder. Did you ever encounter any of these leaflets telling the Germans what to do?
We saw leaflets, but it was telling the German army what to do. It was in German, obviously. And when the Americans told us about it and showed us some of them anyway, they just told them what to do especially if there was a big party of them. They had to make their way to a certain area.
Now, just going back to when you arrived back in Bad Schmiedeberg, when was the last time you saw Mrs. Price then?
The morning before we left on the 1st March.
So you didn't meet her?
Again, no. Because that, according to them, the Russians was in the village. In Schmiedeberg itself.
So you didn't go back down into the town?
No, then he told us, keep out the wooden road if you have any sense. Well, they didn't have any sense, did they? I mean, tell them.
So what do you think, what was their, Ben Lewis and Tom Tunney, what do you think they were thinking about at this time, because they were still in?
Well, they were going to stay until the Americans relieved the place, but the Americans weren't going to, it came out that the Americans weren't going to leave. They didn't know at that time, they were, because the Americans had already come in, hadn't they? And the Americans had come in sort of a carrier, whereas the Russians, was just, well, Ben described them with the odds and sods. There didn't seem to be any disciplined takeover of the area.
So they weren't happy with the Russians being there?
No.
And what about the coal merchant and the two women that were upstairs? Did you see them again?
No, I didn't see them again, but Ben told me they were stopping.
They were staying behind?
They were staying where they were.
Now, just moving back a little bit, so can you remember your last time that you saw Mrs. Price in the village and what her feelings were and what you're talking about?
About a week before we moved out, before we had to go to went on the march, Mrs. Price put, she had a big chest and it was a lined chest. And it was about, it must have been 3 foot by 3 foot by 6 foot. It was out of a chest, and she put knives for it. This was stuff from the restaurant. Linen, blankets, knives, cutlery, candle went on tables and everything, and they put it in this box. And we took it on a big hand cart. I think it would be the same hand cart as we used to do the food on. And we took it out to a place called a village further on, where a friend lived. This person who lived in the who had worked, I met early on, but he worked for Shell. He worked for Shell before the war. What is it now? It was a village about 6 miles from Schmiedeberg. I got photographs of it, and I took this stuff out to it. He lived out in the country, and we buried this. Georgie Gent, Bill Carrick, and myself, and this chap who worked for the Shell, who had met everyone, and we buried it on his land. I thought he was going to be saved until after the war. Because he didn't want the Muslims to get it, and they thought they'd be evacuating themselves, you know, and we buried it. But it wasn't until I had correspondence from, you know, Mrs. Price after the war to learn that this bloke had dug it up and plugged it off. And he was supposed to be a friend of theirs. That's what happened after the war and during the war.
So you, and then after you buried the box,
we went back to the lager. Then the pastor knew that box was going to be buried as well, because he gave us permission to go at evening time.
And so, what was the actual last time that you saw Mrs. Price
before? Maybe a couple of days later, and just now in normal sort of working. The lad was still working up to the day before we went to on the march before we left.
And what were her plans?
Her plan was to make for the Moulder with the two girls. She wanted us to know if she could come, you know, she thought that the POWs would go for the Moulder, but we didn't go towards them, we went the opposite direction. But there was all planning to move out if it, you know.
But when you made you went back to the camp after you'd been marched off, you went back, and then you left again. Did you know then that the civilians wouldn't be allowed?
No, we didn't know until we got to the Moulder. Because the bloke who Phil worked for, he set up in his car, loaded up with all his personal stuff, you know, run out of petrol before he got to the Moulder. I don't know how they ever got that car, whether he did get the car back, I don't know. But he would have they was pushing it when we left him towards the Moulder.
And you've had a story about one of the German bosses being killed. What could you describe? That was
the foreman who worked. Phil Garbutt worked for a sort of an engineering place, and also in that family was a White Russian and a Mongolian Russian, and a foreman sort of person. There was the owner, the foreman, Phil. One White Russian and one Mongolian Russian. And Phil always told us that the Mongolian Russian weren't treated as good as they were. If there was any dirty jobs, particularly the foreman was nasty with them. And before we got where to go to the Moulder, the Mongolian killed the foreman and killed her. Whether he was ever caught or not, I don't know. But the foreman he stabbed him.
What did you think about that at the time?
Well, we were thinking of ourselves, you know, but we thought, well, we must have really deserved it. Because some of the Germans were Nazis all the time. And he was probably a proper party member.
Now, in the very last stage, do you have any last memories of people like the Burgermeister?
it seemed to have disappeared, but it could have left with the Gestapo bloke.
And he wasn't there when you got back?
No. Well, according to Benny, he wasn't there. The Russian was in the village, in Swedenborg itself. So the... And apparently the Burgermeister had disappeared.
Mm. And so when was the last time that you saw Ben Lewis and Tom Trenny? They were still in the...
We met them in the lager. They came into the lager to see us. And the morning before we set off for the Moulder.
And they didn't go with you?
No. And they didn't want to go with us. Tom and Ben said they were staying until the Americans arrived in force. Because they'd obviously talked to some of the Americans. And they'd seen the Russians, and they said the Russians were a bit ragtag army, and they didn't seem to have any trust in them. Was that either?
And did you ever see either of those men again, Tom Trenny and Ben Lewis? So that was the last time that you
saw
them.
The last time I saw them.
Now, so you got into the American lines, you were fed, and then what happened then?
Well, they took us to the airfield, Ella. And there was only sounds, and the Americans, all sorts of POWs that had been liberated in. And we were put into a tent. We didn't go into the main tenting area. They put us into a tent with fellas who made their own way there. We hadn't been liberated. We made our own way there. And we were in a tent of about 14 different blokes. There was a couple of Americans, most of them were British. And while we were there, me, Joe Price, and these two American lads decided that we would go into Hala itself. The trouble was, all the bridges had been, all the river crossing had been blown up. But we found out if you went to the, we weren't allowed into Hala. You couldn't go across that main bridge. So we found out if you went down onto the river bank, you could find a boatman who would take you across for cigarettes or chocolate or whatever. So I mean, it would be dusk, you know, it was evening time. And we went across and we were going to... These American lads knew that there was a German factory where their compo rations had been made up. And we were going to look into it, which we did. And we pinched a lot of rations. Chocolate, gems, there was nearly all four of cigarettes. And me and Joe Price stuffed what we were carrying inside the blouses. But the two American ones filled like sandbags and was carrying it that way. And we got picked up by American patrol. And he was going to, he was out of bounds, it was at the after curfew. So anyway, we talked about it, I said, oh, we spent all this bloody time in a German POW camp, and now you will start putting us in the same boat. Anyway, go on. Get off. Back to the airfield. So we went across the big bridge then. We didn't try to find a boatman to take us across the river. But after we'd been picked up by this American patrol, we dropped us up a bridge and we walked across the bridge. Well, the two American lads was in front of us, and as soon as we got to the sentry on the bridge, we took the bridge and set the bags off with all these rations in. So, and when we got there, we had our house packed inside it, and we got through with them. When we got to the other side of the bridge and was on our way to the airfield, we had to share with what we'd got with the Americans who'd got milk. And then the one of the American lads, we called him Nelson. His first name was Nelson, because we called him one man. He decided he wanted a German pistol. So on Hallowfield you could buy nearly anything. If you wanted a souvenir, you could nearly always buy it up. Somebody had a souvenir which they wanted to sell or whatever. Anyway, he decided he would buy a pistol. And eventually we found somebody who had one for sale. A German Mauser, they called it, you know. And he's got this, he gave him about 500 cigarettes for this. You know, because there was plenty of cigarettes about now, so it was expensive. 500 cigarettes for this Mauser. And the first thing he did with it, he held it in his hand like that, and he brought it down into his other hand and pulled the trigger and shot all straight through his left hand. He never checked to see whether it was loaded or anything. And then he went to hospital. And they took the Mauser off him anyway.
What kind of place was Halle? You looked at this place, you were
Well, it had been knocked about a bit. There was, you know, a lot of damage.
And what about the German civilians here? What was there?
We didn't meet any of them. Well, yes, we did. We saw this German patrol. This American patrol. And we knew that we would pick us up because it was after curfew.